I hate to break it to you, but the Mayan long count calendar is set to end on December 21st. There are some who think that the world will end with it. It's hardly the first time Americans have seen signs of apocalypse. In the 1930s, one of those signs was FDR.
Here was a guy who, at the Democratic National Convention in 1932, got 666 votes. And of course, 666 was traditionally the sign of the Antichrist.
So let's say the end of the world does come. How do you prepare for it?
Well, a tsunami, what you generally do is you calculate the elevation of the land versus the size that the client thinks the tsunami will be.
And for those making the predictions, how have they felt when they've gotten it wrong?
I'm really pleased that, you know, a million people didn't die in 1982
yes.
because we were right.
A history of doomsday in America. Today on Backstory.
Let us face, without panic, the reality of our times. The fact that atom bombs may someday be dropped on our cities. And let us prepare for survival, understanding the weapon that threatens us.
In 1951, the United States Office of Civil Defense produced a video explaining the dangers of an atomic bomb. It was called Survival Under Atomic Attack. It talked about radiation and heat.
People caught in the open as far as 2 miles away suffered flash burns.
It talked about the dangers of falling buildings, and then it told people how to protect themselves.
The first job is to look over your own home for shelter possibilities. If you live in a private home that is well built, the cellar is the safest place to be.
Lots of people built their own shelters. The end of the world could happen at any minute, and people wanted to be prepared. Well, as it turns out, for the doomsday-minded, it's time to hunker down again.
In probably 2005 to 2010, the Mayan calendar 2012 shelter was probably the most predominant product we did.
This is Brian Camden. He's the owner of a company in Virginia Beach called Hardened Structures. They build a lot of intense fortifications for the military, you know, things like bomb-resistant airplane hangars and stuff like that. But they also get requests from regular people here in America who want to build their own shelters or fortify their own homes for an apocalyptic scenario.
And now there's this new scenario, the one Camden mentioned. It's the thought that when the Mayan long count calendar ends on December 21st, 2012, it will usher in the end of the world. When people caught wind of it, well, Brian Camden was the guy who was going to keep them safe. Problem was,
no two clients really agreed or had the same understanding of what 2012 would entail. Even the experts themselves argued about what would happen. Some were, the methane gas exploding. Other ones would be massive solar flares. Other ones firmly believed that a tsunami would, wipe over the United States.
A tsunami. So now, are you prepared to protect against a tsunami?
Oh, yes. A tsunami is fairly straightforward.
I'm sorry. So you see how naive I am about fortified structures.
Well, a tsunami, what you generally do is you calculate the elevation of the land versus the size that the client thinks the tsunami will be. Let's say it's a 1,000-foot tsunami, and the elevation of the land is already at 500 feet. So you would design it for a 500-foot load. But even with that, you must assume that the water will never recede. So you have to have self-rescue supplies within the shelter itself.
Uh-huh.
And any shelter that's designed for submersion has to have a CO2 scrubber and an oxygen machine in it.
Camden has fortified homes for all kinds of end-of-the-world scenarios, homes with sniper positions and non-lethal gas systems meant to fend off human threats, shelters designed to operate off-grid in case there's a contamination in the water supply or power plants go down. And I asked Camden, how bad can things really get? What is the most apocalyptic vision that any client has been concerned about in your 20 years of work? And again, we're talking about the home building, retail side of things, the non-governmental.
I'd have to say it's the belief that the 2012 Mayan scenario will release the methane gas within the Earth's crust and cause the entire Earth to suffer a severe fire for any given length of time. That was probably the hardest to try to mitigate there.
I can imagine. Did you succeed in that, in your opinion?
No, we did not, only because the design solution for it, which required a deep earth bunker with separate air and all that, was beyond the budget of the client.
So you could have done it if they had the resources.
Oh, well, yes. I mean,
You're a can-do guy, Mr. Camden.
Oh, yes, yes. The level of protection is only governed by the size of the budget. It doesn't matter to us, the Mayan calendar, WMDs, terrorism, economic collapse. Once we can figure out what the threat event scenario is, what are the assets to be protected, and the threat levels, from that point on, is engineering and physics.
In this episode of Backstory, what we hope won't be our final episode, we're looking back at Americans throughout history who have predicted doomsday.
From religious zeal to scientific miscalculation, fears about the apocalypse seem to ebb and flow throughout history. We want to figure out when they spike and why. Some of these predictions fall flat on their faces, but others, well, they're a little more complicated. Starting in the 1740s, end times thinking became fairly common among American Indians in the East. And by the end of the 19th century, doomsday prophecy had spread to the Indians of the West. The buffalo had all but disappeared, Indian land had been taken, and the Indians themselves were forced to live on reservations. The end of the world didn't seem so far-fetched. It was at this time of intense hardship that in 1889, a Paiute Indian prophet named Wovoka began prophesying about the coming of a new world.
This is where the apocalyptic event comes in.
Jeff Osler is an historian at the University of Oregon, and he's written extensively about Wovoka's prophecies.
We don't know exactly how he imagined the new world would occur, but it's clear that he taught that it would occur through some kind of cataclysmic event.
Maybe it would occur through fire.
Maybe through a kind of earthquake.
Maybe through a flood.
Some sources suggest a great snow.
Wovoka didn't know what it would be, but he did know that it was going to happen soon.
And it would destroy or remove European Americans. And then after that, there would be a renewed world where game would return, ancestors who had died would return to life, and Indian people would be able to live well again.
Wovoka's followers prepared for this renewed world with a dance known as the Ghost Dance.
It was a round dance where people would hold hands and they would dance in a circle. And then after a period of time, some of the dancers would lose consciousness.
While they were unconscious, dancers would have visions of the new world to come after the apocalypse.
You can read some of these visions. They're quite remarkable, where somebody says, well, I died or I lost consciousness and I was on horseback and the world was green and not like this dead world that I'm now living in. And then, I rode up over a hill and I saw a figure on horseback coming toward me. And, it was my sister who had died recently. And buffalo were grazing. And so people would have these visions and then they would awake and then they would relate them. They would tell them.
Word started to spread into Wyoming, Colorado, and Montana. But the ghost dance had the most profound effect on a tribe from the Dakotas, the Lakota Sioux.
Somehow or another, we don't know exactly how they get wind of this, that Wovoka, somebody out in the West, is teaching this wonderful thing.
Like other plains tribes, the Lakota had relied heavily on the now decimated buffalo, and they had just recently been confined to reservations. Wovoka's prophecies struck a chord. So the Lakota tribal leaders gathered together and decided to send a formal delegation to see him in Nevada.
You have to realize there's a railroad network, and there they are going out there, They're going to reject this whole world, but they're going to get out there on trains.
The Lakota emissaries brought Wovoka's teachings back to the reservations, and many of the Lakota started doing the ghost dance in preparation for the new world. But the dance was illegal on reservations. Practicing Native traditions was seen as uncivilized and barbarous. Government officials tried to stop it. They arrested the leaders and then hoped it would just go away. That's when things screeched to a halt at Wounded Knee Creek.
By the fall of 1890, the military decided to send troops to suppress the ghost dance among the Lakotas. It was only the Lakotas they sent troops against.
In late December, the 7th Cavalry came across a band of about 400 ghost dancers led by an Indian named Bigfoot. The soldiers surrounded Bigfoot's camp at Wounded Knee Creek.
In the course of disarming Bigfoot's people, a shot rang out, and then it was the 7th Cavalry opened fire, and at the end of several hours, it was a death toll of probably 240 to 270 of Bigfoot's people. You know, a horrific slaughter.
I did not know then how much was ended.
Years later, a Lakota Indian named Black Elk reflected on what he saw that day.
When I look back now from this high hill of my old age, I can still see the butchered women and children lying heaped and scattered all along the Crooked Gulch. And I can see that something else died there in the bloody mud and was buried in the blizzard.
So we might even say the ghost dancers predicted a new world, and they got one.
Yeah.
Osler says there's a bit of a postscript to the story. Clearly, things went terribly for the Plains Indians for a long time. Much of their world was destroyed. But if they were hoping for some sort of renewal, well, it might be creeping in bits and pieces.
Some of the things that the ghost dancers were talking about are occurring. There are more buffalo in the Great Plains than there once were. There's more Indians. And, you know, by many measures, conditions for Indian people are much better than they were in the time of the ghost dance and after Wounded Knee. There are serious problems, but, you know, when we think of all that is happening in Indian country, in terms of cultural revitalization and language, it's quite extraordinary, really.
Special thanks to Jeff Osler from the University of Oregon for helping us tell this story.
At the end of the world, I will hold you so close.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, what do you do if you think the end is near? Do you jump from buildings? Or do you try to make the world a better place? Maybe a little bit of both.
Our show today is all about the history of doomsday in America, prophecies and proclamations about what comes next, if anything.
It's hard to separate talk of the apocalypse from talk of religion. The very term apocalypse is most often associated with the New Testament book of Revelation. It means an uncovering or a revealing. Back in the 1830s and 1840s, America was experiencing a wave of religious fervor. The Second Great Awakening, as it's come to be known,